Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Think about your story. I will never stop thinking about your story where you puked into somebody's vagina.
Vagina, yeah. Yes. And lapped it up as a reflex.
Like a little doggy.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out!
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that's hosted by two non-chuggy millennial dykes. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with actor, musician, comedian even, Rivka Reyes, about love addiction.
Uh-oh, I think we just triggered half our listeners.
Whoopsies.
Get yourself to a safe space if you need to. Hit pause now, wait till you have some tissues around, and then resume listening later. If you haven't already, you can go and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a nice review. It's good karma. Or you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/dykingout. We just recorded that episode. Melody, what do we talk about?
We give a little recap of our Dyke Beer crossover event in Prospect Park.
Yep.
We talk about our upcoming summer travel plans. We talk about what our past guests have been up to. Some very
exciting
developments, for real.
Yes. Well, Melody,
yeah,
we got to see each other in the flesh this week.
It hit me on the way there. It's just been once over the last year.
So crazy. It's so crazy to see you in person, though I felt like we were kind of dividing and conquering with talking to people. So I still can't wait to hang out with you again.
Right.
Because it's been a while since we've hung out like one-on-one.
Yeah.
It will happen, though. Things are opening up. We were hanging out outdoors safely without masks with vaccinated folks.
It was a
good time. And I didn't ask you, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Funny you should ask. It's obviously a result of this park hang. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's how do you top that?
Right, right.
So obviously we had a great time at the park. We got gifted some hats. Listeners, Daphne and Emily showed up with hats on hats on hats for us. I'm talking, you know, baseball caps with the Dyking Out logo, bucket hats, tie-dyed hats.
Embroidered logo on a pink camouflage, hot pink
hot
tie-dye.
Hot pink for you.
Right. They know their audience.
Yeah. So thank you so much. I actually was wearing a bucket hat on the way to the hang, and Allie said it couldn't pull it off. And so there was a bucket hat waiting for me when I got there. Amazing. And then listener Daria Roy gifted me a Yukon Huskies basketball flat brim hat.
Snap. Oh my gosh, so many hats.
I came home with 4 hats.
I didn't even count how many. I showed up with a hat. Cecilia was wearing a diking out hat. I was wearing a plaid hat with a embroidered buffalo on it. And then we just got more hats. So I think the lesson is if you wear hats, more hats will come to you by some type of like lesbian or queer physics law.
It's queer physics. Yeah.
Queer physics. It's a beautiful thing. I love science. It worked out great.
So funny. And I guess the gayest realization I had this week is that snapbacks look good on me. And I'm formally apologizing.
Hats.
And bucket hats. That's kind of cute, right? I just would like to maybe apologize for all the clowning I did on snapback lesbians.
I don't think we're ever clowning because they wear a snapback. It's a look. It's more that the snapbacks comes along with certain other traits.
Yeah, and I think I wasn't making fun of it. I would think I was distancing myself from the archetype, of course.
But now your hair is pretty straight. It's too short. Your hair is too short now to be a snapback queer for sure. But
I'm plucking the aesthetic because I like it. Yeah.
Love it.
So, you know, just drowning in hats is the gayest thing for me. What about you, Carolyn? What's the gayest thing of the week for you?
I mean, I knew it was going to be from the hangout, but of all the things, I was trying to narrow it down. So maybe you can help me. I did pass on, finally, the Gay Champion of the Week trophy to you. Sharing the joy of having that because I've had it the whole time and I haven't been able to actually give it to you. So, you know, you've been doing gay shit and gay championing Been excelling. You put in the effort every week. All right. I see you. If you don't have the gay thing, you go out and you make gay stuff happen, Melody, and you deserve that trophy. Hand that off to you. We hung a diking out flag in Prospect Park, which attracted a lot of attention. That was pretty gay. Passed out some diking out temporary tattoos to the people who showed up. Feeling a lot of guilt about not answering messages from one particular listener, Kelly, who was in from Chicago, because we thought she was a cop. And
we're fielding some emails from cops over the last week.
But she found us. It turns out okay. More about that on the Patreon app. And the thing though that I think might be the gayest thing was that I noticed that I was doing a lot of squatting.
Yeah.
At this hangout.
Yeah, you were.
I would not sit on the ground, even though there were blankets and stuff, and I could have sat and I could have been fine, but I was either standing or squatting or kind of like kneeling, and my legs and my feet kept falling asleep, and then I'd get up and walk around and then squat again, and then everything would fall asleep all over again. But afterwards, I was trying to think, like, what were the gay moments of this hang? I was like, I squatted so much that my thighs are a little sore.
Amazing.
Just a lot of being in the squat position.
Squatting's... Squatting's very gay. Yeah, there is a gay squat.
Butch. Yeah, yeah. I'm like coming up to people, hands on my thighs like I'm a softball coach, squatting down to talk to people who were sitting comfortably. And I didn't want to commit to sitting anywhere. I wanted to stay mobile and agile, but I didn't want to stand and be hovering. Mm-hmm. So mastering the squat socializing.
Yeah.
What's the gayest thing I did this week?
That's so funny. The squat has been a prevalent picture pose over the last few years. And I actually went out with some gays. We went and got drinks last Friday night. We're walking down the street and me, Pascal, Alicia Brown, our friend Brian, thought it'd be funny if we all wore blazers out to the bar.
It wasn't funny. It was amazing, Melody. What an amazing idea.
A choice, yeah.
I love it.
We completely took on new personas. It was necessary. Like, we really just needed to get out of our heads and get in some blazers and take on the night. And we were walking down the street, and we're like, we have to get a picture before we go home. And there was a woman who overheard us. We asked her if she could take our picture. This woman directed a full music video. She had us, I have like 80 pictures. They're all incredible. She was directing different poses, different glances, different angles. She kept telling us we were invited to the cookout. We exchanged information with her. We are in touch. I wanted to squat. I see a lot of young people, such a dork. Like, I don't take a lot of pictures. I don't post a lot of pictures, but like, I was like, I want to see if I could do this gay squat now that you mention it.
Do it. Did you see it? Well. Yeah. I saw the photos and I was like, these photos are amazing.
Go to my tagged photos on Instagram if you're curious. I did a gay squat, guys.
And if it hadn't been for our park hangout, that definitely would have been your gayest thing. I thought that was going to be your gayest thing. But of course, you can't top the park hangout. But the blazers and the photo shoot with two other queers, so gay. Perfection. I love it. And that's why you have the trophy.
Yes. Thank
that's
you.
That's why.
And gay thank you. On gay on because gay. You know I am dating a... Is dating? We've been dating for 5 years. My lover, Allie, is a former pageant queen. And when she lived in Chicago, she had towers of trophies, sashes, crowns, tiaras. Sure. So thank you for my one trophy to put next to all of that. I do appreciate it. Oh, yeah, they're all under our bed now. In Chicago, we had the room. Now, not she breaks them out for photo shoots and stuff.
For special occasions. Yeah. Well, don't keep this trophy under your bed. Keep it out. Be proud. And speaking of being proud, I'm really proud that we get to dike out on this episode with this guest who we've been talking about having for a while.
Yes.
Somebody that you know from your Chicago days.
I've been telling you, we gotta get them on the pod, and I'm glad we did. You know what? Speaking of hats, Rivka was wearing a hat.
Yes.
Yeah.
So today we are diking out with LA-based actor, musician, and comedian Rivka Reyes about love addiction. They are the host of the podcast Where Are We Now? And many of you are familiar with them from their role in the movie School of Rock. Let's get into it. All right, Riv, thank you so much for diking out with us this week. It's so great for me to meet you.
It is so great for me to see you. It has been so long.
It's been such a long time. I feel like the last time I saw you was in Chicago when neither of us were living there anymore.
Right. The last real memory I have of you was us at Ladylike, a show in Chicago where you tell disgusting stories. And I remember you telling a story about going down on a girl and getting like toilet paper. That wasn't even what the story was about, but like I think about that a lot. Like when I'm even wiping my own vagina, I'll think about your story.
Well, I'm glad it landed. And I think about your story. I will never stop thinking about your story where you puked into somebody's vagina.
Vagina, yeah.
Yes.
And lapped it up as a reflex.
Like a little doggy.
Oh my God. I'm so glad, Riv, that you brought that up because that's a story that Melody brought up on Stereo, which is a different platform where we do live broadcasts a few times a week. And I don't think it's made it over to an official podcast app. So I've just been waiting for Melody to let everybody know that she vomited into a vag.
I don't tell this story because I had the, I guess, pleasure of seeing a crowd react to it. And I did send some people running out of the room to vomit. Like, it was like... I upset people. Oh, my God. On this same show, my story doesn't even compare. This is the same show where I think we were all on it. Allie was on it. She was visiting or something, or she was about to move. And there were some girls heckling her in the front row.
Oh, my God.
And so she, remember this? She reached up into her shorts, pulled out her tampon, and put it on their plate.
That is true.
In the front row. And goes, why don't you stick this in your mouth? Or something like that. Because she was so protective because they were heckling
beautiful.
Me. And then she went out next, and I think she was just being overly protective. But yeah, disgusting show all around.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's
wow.
truly the most, and they also have a podcast on which I told a story about, I mean, my piece that night, I remember I was like, oh, I don't have like one gross story, so why don't I just give my like top 10 hits?
Yes.
And I like told it like the top 10 like most disgusting things. And this was back when I was still drinking a lot and using and heavily just deep in like sex addiction and love addiction. And I was actually like wearing these stories as a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. And I feel like your story was coming from a place of, you had been sober, I think, for a little bit, and you were like, this is coming from a place of knowing I had a problem and needing to stop.
Yes.
And I was still very much like, that's crazy, she's an alcoholic. And then a couple months later, I got sober too.
Yes. Oh, man. Well, that's part of living in Chicago, especially being a performer in Chicago. It's just a part of the culture. And yeah, I didn't realize it was a problem until I left. And maybe that was the same for you.
Big time. Big time. Yes.
Coming of age in Chicago, I think a lot of people have to eventually reevaluate their relationship with alcohol as they approach their 30s, because it is a wild place.
Yeah. And then you come to LA and everyone's, or not everyone, but at least in my experience, I was working on a play and I was just like, you want to grab a drink after the show? And the girl was like, oh, I don't really drink. And I was just like, oh, word. And she was like, yeah, because on camera, you can see the day after somebody's had a drink. It's very visible. And I was just like, oh, I must stop drinking. I have to stop. Of course, the vain reason is why I initially made the choice to put it down. And I definitely had been on my way out when it came to alcohol. Like, for a while, I knew this was becoming a problem. I knew I was blacking out more than I was enjoying it. And then with this girl telling me, yeah, you know, they could see it on your face, I was just like, oh, then I'm fucked. I will not make it in this industry. So I quit drinking for my career and then realized that it was a deeper thing than vanity. It was more just like a spiritual thing that was just like sick and like dead inside. And it was contributing heavily to like my relationships. I'm just glad that I got, I don't know. I like found the notebook in which I had written that set out too, for Ladylike, like very recently.
Does it read just like a playlist of disgusting things?
Literally,
you picked, like, no, you went off and you like, all right, 10, 9, 8, or like.
It's true. Like, it's literally, and on the page, it's not like a full like paragraph for each thing. It's just like, bottom up wit, which is the name of a beer from Revolution in Chicago. It's like bottom up wit, blowjob, throw up story, throwing up out of the Uber window story, cocaine nosebleed pussy story. Like, literally, like, it's like a list of, like, either, I don't know, all these. These like tracks on like a really bad punk album, like
I love looking at an old set list and just seeing the 1 to 2 word things. It's like, all right, toilet miscarriage, grandma murder,
like a deranged manifesto.
Period squelch. Like, just for real.
Yeah. You're like, I hope I never leave this at the office or leave it anywhere where people are going to find it. It's not going to be good. Well, before we get to know you even more intimately, we've got to ask, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
I think the gayest thing that I did this week might have been last night where, this has been a really gay week. First of all, I took off three mental health days from work, which is pretty gay already. On the first day of mental health, I went to get my muscles scraped by a muscle whisperer named Jackie. Who lives in Sherman Oaks, and she has pink dreadlocks, and she scraped my muscles.
That whole sentence is so gay.
And it gets gayer, honey.
The way you narrate it.
It gets gayer. Okay. My gay friend David brought me some ice packs because I don't have any, because I'm not a real adult. And they came over and brought me a bunch of ice packs and soup. And then last night, I had a gentle exorcism from a spiritista named Caitlin, who is non-binary, and they like went into my soul and got rid of some of these nasty spirits that were kind of lingering. And then I had dinner with my ancestors. So I think it's been a pretty gay couple of days.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Your last night was gayer than my whole pandemic. My whole last year.
Yeah.
Congrats.
We have a gay champion of the week trophy, and I feel like we have to mail it to you and that you own it forever, because that was just so much gayness right there.
I'm honored. It is an honor. Absolutely.
Wow. I want to know more about this exorcism.
Right, same.
This light exorcism.
A gentle exorcism, yes. Well, I am a tarot reader, and I also read the Akashic Records, and I'm part of this cohort of fellow, like, intuitive business owners. We've got, like, Reiki healers, tarot readers, yes. like, psychics, other, you know, people who make herbal tonics and stuff, you name it. We got it. Somatic therapists, people who, like, help women on the journey to mothering and death doulas, etc. And it's called the North Node. It's a group of badass witches. And I love it. It's really fun. And on Thursdays, we do this give and take Thursday thing where people like write their offerings and there are trades. This person, Caitlin, who I've been seeing in the forum and I like, we've been following each other on the internet and they were like, hey, like I'm offering a gentle exorcism. And I was just like, what the fuck? That sounds incredible. Whatever that is, I want it.
Right.
So I reached out to them and I was just like, yeah, let me get a gentle exorcism. And yeah, we just met up on Zoom. They instantly were telling me all about my ancestors and what they required of me. It seems like they have been doing this a very long time because they were just so quick. And I'm still a baby when it comes to this stuff. I started reading tarot for myself a couple years ago when I was like very single and very like, I don't know. What do I look for in a partner? And I was just like shuffling the cards and using them kind of alcoholically. And then over the pandemic, I started reading for my friends and stuff and being like, wow, I'm actually like really good at this. And I've been reading them for myself so long that I have my own interpretations of these cards. And I think it'd be really cool to be able to read for others. So I started doing that and I joined the North Node and meeting all these other folks and everyone's at these like different levels of witchcraft and experience and stuff. And so it's really cool to be read by somebody like that who has such deep connection without comparing myself in like a negative or unhealthy way. But yeah, it was freaky. I mean, I don't know if any of you have ever seen like a medium or anything like that.
I really want to.
Yeah, I haven't. I think my wife is sort of like gently playing the long game of convincing me that that's a good thing that we should go and do or invest in. Like she just got this audiobook about signs from your dead relatives. So I'm like, okay, she's priming me. This is where this is headed.
Yeah. I mean, it is really cool and it's a little freaky. But since I'm like addicted to that, I've always been kind of a highly sensitive person and I've always felt the presence of things that weren't there but totally were. And now that I live alone in my apartment, and this is the first time I've had a place that was mine, everything in this apartment is mine, I own it all, it's loud in here. So I think that like maybe some bottom feeders have kind of followed me into this apartment maybe, and I would like for you to get in there and see if you can figure it out. And the thing that stuck with me the most from this session last night was they kept on using this phrase, remove the pins out of your heart, which I think is actually kind of a nice segue into today's episode, right? I guess there were a bunch of pins placed there by others on my heart that they had to get in there and remove. And today I feel like a complete different person. I feel a foot taller from the Muscle Whisperer, and I feel like spiritually, I think probably a mile taller because I've got all these pins kind of removed out of me. But it was a really dope experience that I can't really explain more than that, because I feel like I'm doing Caitlin a disservice, but I feel amazing. Oh, the gayest part is that I like took an ice bath after with some Epsom salts, and I had my little setup in the bath. I have a little bath tray.
Nice.
And I used like a little bit of a mix that my boss from my skincare muggle job, she like made this like bath mix for me, and I poured some of that in there, and I had this ASMR guy, and I have like a yes. little galaxy light that I got swindled into buying from Twitter.
I gotta just pull the trigger and go to a viral tweet and get that,
because so
it looks
good.
So much fun.
It's so good. I love mine. And I just like blissed out in the bath for a little bit. And and woke up this morning feeling heavenly.
Well, I think all of our listeners are now putting in for 3 days off of work and are all going to do the same thing, because that sounds amazing. I guess we caught you on a great day now that you've been on the others. You're a different person than when we asked you to be a guest on the
right.
podcast. How cool.
Yeah, I might be straight now. I don't even know.
It is a journey. So, yeah, so we're here to talk about love addiction and related things with
fun
that
stuff.
Which is admittedly something I don't know too much about. So, if anyone else listening isn't that aware, could you maybe define love addiction?
Sure. Love addiction, to me at least, and there's a lot of different ways that this manifests, is basically that I use relationships like I used drugs. Maybe I use people like I used to use drugs. And I'm a couple years into deep, deep therapy and recovery from this and from drugs. But I think the core of all addiction is codependency, right? Love addiction and codependency to me are synonymous. Some people are addicted to just sex and not love. Some people are addicted to love and not sex. Basically, if it gives me validation, or that feeling of, you know, when you get a text from somebody that you've been waiting for a text from all day and it feels like you've taken a hit off of a really good joint. That to me is what sums up love addiction to me. So yeah, it can look like a lot of things. It can look like assigning magical qualities to people and then being really disappointed when they don't fulfill those fantasies that you put on them, being like, wait, how dare you? It can look like chasing after emotionally unavailable people. In my case, sometimes it looks like people who are emotionally available chasing after me and me getting kind of a high off of pushing them away. So like anything that falls under the umbrella of anxious or avoidant attachment style can be a part of the love addiction family. I'm like a nice like blend of anxious and avoidant, and I've learned that a lot about myself through just reading a lot about those attachment styles and codependent no more and being in recovery programs for love addiction. And I'm by no fucking means an expert on this at all. Like,
oh, sure,
I have no experience being in a healthy romantic relationship still, especially not a queer one. But I'm definitely really good at talking about this shit. And it's wild because now I'm kind of the friend that people go to for love advice. And I'm like, that's wild considering how I was.
Right. When you brought up the topic of love addiction, for a second I had to pause and be like, wait a minute. I'm not a love addict, am I? You know, like the thing that people do when they, and I've heard of love addiction before, but as somebody who, I came out as a lesbian when I was 17, and I'm more or less a serial monogamous, and in all my relationships, I've said I love you to the person. And even in times where I'm like, I'm going to be single for a year, I can't. I can't make it work. I'm like, is that why? Am I like addicted to having to love someone else and be loved back? Is that it? That, how can you tell? And then I was reading that for lesbians especially, because if you're biologically female, you emit a chemical that I guess men don't emit. And then, so if you have two women doing that, they bond like faster and more
That's
intense.
Why we get the U-Haul.
So
it makes That's it, why we U-Haul.
Yeah, that right, right, out. Right. It's scientific, right? So it's like, how do you know whether it's that happening, or do you have like an addictive personality in general? I don't know.
Yeah. Like, well, something that I think is a really interesting thing that I hear a lot in conversations around sex and love addiction, we're actually not addicted to love, because love is letting others voluntarily evolve and grow. And like, love is like justice, right? Love is honesty and faith, you know, and faithfulness. And what I was addicted to was just the high of having somebody want to be around me. And I was
affirmation,
right? And then also the physical touch, sure. Like, I was definitely a bit of a sex addict back in my day. Yeah, and then I would have these spells of absolute avoidance, fear of people, where I would completely not be able to show any sort of affection for somebody, especially if they liked me, because in my brain I'm telling myself, well, they're lying. They're absolutely delusional for liking you because you're a fucking asshole, right? And I would confuse love with pity. I would confuse love with this need to be rescued or this need to rescue somebody else, especially for me with relationships with other femme folks. I always was going for straight girls. I was always going for girls who were still in the closet or like straight girls and being like, oh, I'm going to get you out of that closet. I'm going to, ooh, you know, when you're done with me, you're going to want to come out to your parents because I'm amazing. And then when they wouldn't, I'd be like, yeah, I'm trash. I couldn't fix her. And then there's the other thing where we're not addicted to is love, but what we are addicted to, or we meaning I'm addicted to limerence, which is the state of falling for someone. That feeling of, when are they going to text me back? Oh my God, what am I going to do? Oh, seeing them like gesture with their hand and you're like, oh, should I grab it and kiss it? That feeling is actually what I'm addicted to where like the other day, one of my friends who I like am attracted to physically was over and we hugged and it sent this chill up my spine and it was like that feeling of being in a bar the first time after getting sober and smelling the tequila, right? Where I was just like, oh, you know? But now the difference between like untreated love addict and a recovering love addict who is like highly self-aware of themselves, I know that I don't have to act on that attraction for her. I know that I don't have to act on every single time that I feel that jolt of, wow, I like this person, or maybe I have a crush on this person. To where before, when I was untreated and when I was still heavily in my behavior, my acting out, my addictive behavior, I would act on every attraction I had for every single person because I was so afraid that if we're going for the taking breadcrumbs kind of metaphor, I would take crumbs because I was afraid that I would never eat again. Mm-hmm. When there are actually like beautiful croissants just in the oven right now, and I just have to be patient. And I don't have to eat those stale crumbs. I can wait for the full croissant. But I didn't, my brain doesn't, you know, it's object permanence or lack thereof, I guess, where if I don't see it in front of me, I'm like, well, it's not there. All of it really stems from fear. It's deeply like a fear-related wound.
First of all, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. I get it too well now. And I'm like, relating a little too much.
Right.
Definitely
right.
Have some journaling to do.
Especially with the three of us being performers who love validation. Right. I think that's...
We know that dopamine hit and quest. But yeah, I am definitely codependent in relationships. My girlfriend and I recognize we both are codependent. It's just like this that we keep putting it off. Like, we need to address it. We're going to go to couples. We're going to figure it out. But that's just where we are. But I'm realizing how nuanced, I guess, love addiction can be. And thank you so much for breaking that down.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
The different forms that it takes is very interesting, because I wouldn't have thought about that, the pushing away part of it, but that does make a lot of sense when you break it down.
Yeah, that's called, called in like the spaces that I, the recovery spaces that I occupy. It's called love anorexia, emotional anorexia, wow. Or love avoidance. That's like the pushing people away, or the like the extreme fear of love, which, yeah, again, stems deeply from this kind of addictive, not being able to differentiate what's true and what's fantasy. And fantasy can be negative, too, where it's like, I'm never going to find the one. I'm never going to find the one. And it's like this addiction to like finding the one. I was actually just talking to my friend Jake about this the other day. Like, we were both sitting on my balcony and like
past guest Jake Knoll.
Past guest Jake Knoll.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
Obsession of the pod.
Love
yeah,
them.
They're a favorite.
They're so. My favorite. I love them so much. Like, and funny. We were both talking about like, we have this book, Calling in the One, and neither of us have started the work. Like, I think it's like coming from just a deep fear of like, okay, what happens if I find the one and I don't like them? Which is so fucking selfish and arrogant that I think I can control that, you know? And that's the other thing is like, I feel like all the addictions come from this place of control, even though we have no control. Like, it is deep, deep control and fear that like things aren't going to go our way.
It is crazy how much fear drives the decisions we make. And I hadn't really thought about that too much, but it is right. I mean, even when I first got together with my wife now, we were both going through a divorce, and I knew it was a terrible time to be getting into a relationship with somebody, because I again, both had just gotten divorced. And I had, you know, my mind was like, don't do this. Don't get involved. Don't jump into something else. But then the fear in me was like, but I have such a connection with this person. And if I hit pause, I'm so afraid of what would happen. So I'm just going to dive into it and ignore the red flags. And I mean, I'm glad I did. It worked out for me, at least so far. And
yeah.
But yeah, it took a while for me to kind of revisit that in therapy and be like, what was going, like, I wasn't in therapy when that was going on. And afterwards, even though I'm happy with where I am right now, I think I need to revisit what was going on in my mind and why I made these kind of crazy decisions to go from like divorce to the first person that I hook up with post-divorce and then marrying them within a year.
It's all just information, right? And I think it's really cool that with therapy and recovery and programs and whatever, groups and all of that, what we can do is revisit that stuff so that we don't have to recreate it, you know? And I am constantly just revisiting. And even when I was getting my muscles scraped the other day, I was having these memories coming up. She was doing my face. Like, at one point she was like, obviously I'm not like, she didn't go super hard because I'm not all bruised up. My arms are completely like, don't ask. I mean, it looks like I was in an accident. But she was getting in my sinuses And I used to do cocaine, like, heavily. I think I did coke for, like, 5 years, starting in, like, 2013 when I was 20, which is crazy. And, like, when she was getting into my sinuses, it unlocked these memories that in that moment I was able to see, like, myself from this kind of bird's eye view and just hold space for that person that was in so much pain. Because the reason I started doing cocaine was because this boy that I had a crush on from Second City, and we used to do improv together, like, he was a big cokehead, and he was just like, hey, thinking about getting an 8-ball for, like, the show tonight. And this is for, like, a conservatory Second City grad show. And he was just like, let's do coke for this. And I was just like, hell yeah. And I was just like, you know what? I think I'm gonna, like, wait until after the show to do that. And he was just like, okay, well, I was just gonna, like, go back to my place and, like, go do it really quickly between, like, rehearsal and the show. And I was just like, oh. And my brain goes, anything to be alone with him. So I went and I did. And I, like, you know, I was fine. The show actually was great because it was like that I had arrived moment of, like, doing coke for the first time where I'm like, wow, like, I could be this fucking smart and quick with improv. Like, fuck yeah. Like, let's do this every day, you know? And then I pretty much did for, like, 5 years with a couple of breaks because I was feeling like I was getting damaged. And, you know, knowing that the reason for me, the catalyst for me to start drinking, smoking cigarettes, doing coke, smoking weed, all of it was because I liked somebody and they were doing it. Like, I know that now. And I don't have to recreate that with, like, whatever it is. Like, you know, if I start, you know, seeing somebody who likes rock climbing, I don't have to start rock climbing to, like, yeah, you know, relate to them. Like, you know, I will not rock climb. Like, that is not for me. I'm not that kind of gay. But, you know, it's just, like, all information. And I love what you said about ignoring the red flags. Like, for me, I'll see a red flag and then I'll put on a pair of rose-colored glasses so it just looks like a regular flag. Just, like, keep walking, you know?
Right. Yeah. That just reminded me of a friend I have from high school. And we don't talk so much nowadays, but I see her on social media and she definitely is the, I'm going to take up rock climbing. I'm going to take up all of your interests and completely change my personality, my look, for who I'm with. And it's crazy that it's still happening to this day with her. Every boyfriend I know.
Shapeshifting. It's real. That is a characteristic. Yeah. That is, like, a sign, you know? And I would be willing to bet that everybody has a little love addict in them that, you know, but it's like there are people who that love addict consumes and kills in the form of they can't be alone with themselves. So they end up, like, trigger warning, like, killing themselves, or it leads them to other addictions, like it did for me, like where I was just like, well, the people isn't enough, so I'm going to use coke now. You know, some people, you know, do the same thing where it's like, well, I can't, you know, I can't find somebody, so I'm just going to start paying for it. Not that, like, paying for sex is bad. Like, inherently, I think sex work is actually dope and it's a great service. But, like, there are people who, like, they ruin their lives because they spend all their money on, like, sex work, and it ends up, you know, really ruining them. I think everybody has a little bit of a love addict in them, just a little bit. And it's just like, there are folks, you know, for me, I was at death's door multiple times. Like, I mean, I've again, trigger warning, like, tried to, like, unalive myself for people over relationships. It wasn't the alcohol. It wasn't the drugs that was going to kill me. It was the people addiction, the people snorting, as I like to call it. And, you know, now that I have that clarity and that awareness around it, and that I, you know, had to, I mean, it took me getting sober off drugs and alcohol to realize that that wasn't the root of my problems. That's that my self-centeredness and my self-pity, like the weird combination of those two, was the root of my troubles. Like, and that is, like, the root of my thinking too. Like, all of my really delusional thoughts about myself and about others, and about, like, oh, like, this person owes me, because, like, no, nobody owes you shit. Nobody owes me shit. I don't owe anybody shit. They don't owe me shit. All I need to do is continue to grow and, like, work on myself. And then down the line, like, even if I don't do calling in the one, like, the workbook or whatever, somebody who is also, like, as committed to growth and change and, like, working on themselves and doing that self-reflection and that revisiting of those patterns and not recreating them, that person will present themselves when the universe is ready for me to have that person, and they might already be in my life. Who fucking knows? Like, I don't know. Yeah. You know, I was just thinking about this, like, I used to love, yeah, like I mentioned before, I loved pulling tarot cards for myself to try and like see into the future and like, you know, try to control the future and manipulate spirit, which is so fucked.
Right.
And I was flown out to LA for a screen test in 2019, early 2019. And, you know, after I'd finished the screen test, I had the rest of the day to myself to like do whatever I wanted. And I was just like, well, I'm certainly going to go to see a psychic. And I was just like, I need a love reading. Like, and I was single. I had just gotten out of a breakup. I was a little over a year sober and wasn't getting what I wanted out of sobriety. So selfish. And I was just like, what am I doing wrong? And she was just like, it's okay. The psychic was like, you're going to meet your soulmate so soon. And they're a poet and they're a yogi. And you guys are going to like move in together really fast. And you guys are going to get married. And oh my God. And I was just like, oh, that sounds great. And she was like, yeah, just so you know, though, this is like a twin flame thing. So that means that the relationship is going to burn out really quick. And I was just like, okay, cool. And I like party.
Plant that right. seed.
Planted the seed for sure. And then I prayed for that person. I was like, oh, give me my poet yogi God, please. Every night. And then cut to like a couple months later, I'm at a show and I run into this person who, oh, and the psychic also said, she was like, oh, it's like a friend of a friend. Like you already like have met this person, but you don't know each other really. Like it's a friend of a friend. And I was just like, okay, God, please. Who is it? And then I started looking for that. Right. And then I ran into this person who played in a band with my best friend, and I ended up dating them. Him, you know, I will say, I dated a cis man for a year, and like it happens. Every so once and often, you accidentally fall onto a dick, and it's fine. And he was a poet and a yogi, and we did move it. We U-Haul.
Wow.
He was like, he reminded me of Lisa the Male Lesbian for sure. Like he only dates queer women and like non-binary people. And like a couple of his exes have now like transitioned into men. And like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Sounds like my ex-boyfriend actually.
For real. For real. Like, it's so funny because he's like so addicted to not being queer. He's like addicted to identifying as straight. I'm like, but honey, all you date is lesbians and non-binary people. But anyway, like all of that happened. My higher power was really powerful. Like, and like, they were like, all right, you asked for it. Here's your poet yogi, you bitch. And like, and it is exactly what happened, is that the relationship burned out because what happened was we U-Hauled. We did the whole thing. We moved to California together.
I thought so. Yeah. Okay. We, just watching from afar.
Yeah. And like what ended up happening was like he became a love addict too, because I wasn't finished with my recovery yet. And not that I'll ever be finished, but I was still deep in my defense mechanisms and my like little fearing the emotional deprivation. So I was pursuing relationships when I knew that I wasn't ready. And then it was made abundantly clear that we were not right for each other during the pandemic. And like, we were forced to live with each other in this little studio in Echo Park. And I was just not happy. And that's when the real shit had started, because I had been checking out like recovery meetings for love addiction and codependency and stuff for quite some time. But then when the pandemic hit, I was just like, well, I have nothing to do but recover. I have nothing to do but face this shit finally and recover. And I did. And during the like first couple months of the pandemic, like I realized, I was like, it is, you are not it. That's not you. She was right. The fucking psychic was right. The addiction, you know, burnt that relationship to a crisp, and it wasn't my addiction that did it. Like it was his. And like, I'll always have love for him because he showed me that I'm lovable. I didn't need a man to show me that, but it was nice to be with somebody who was so emotionally available and so willing to be affectionate with me, because I'd never had that before. Because all of the people that I had dated before were either like closeted straight girls or like alcoholic men, like, you know, stand-up comedians. Like, I mean, like, yeah. And this was nice. But then I started seeing the red flags when he started talking about, I want to do stand-up. And I was just like,
Oh, wow.
No.
Yeah.
Please don't.
The biggest of red flags.
Please don't. He was like, yeah, he like started coming to like a bunch of my shows out here. And he was like, you know what, stand-up, I feel like I could do it. And I was just like, no.
Oh, nope. See, he's mirroring you. That wasn't the term you used, but taking on your interests.
Shapeshifting.
Yeah. Shapeshifting.
Definitely.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, are you dating right now? How do you, like, if you are, how do you navigate dating?
Yeah.
As a love addict?
That's a great question. Yes. So, some people who are in recovery from sex and love addiction, they come up with a dating plan where they write out, oh, on the first date, on the first two dates, we're not going to have sex. We're not going to kiss or anything. Like, we can hold hands, we can hug, but no kissing, no sex, no oversharing, no self-gossip, which is like just being really, really like indiscreet about your endeavors and stuff. I personally, that's not my brand of recovery. I like to like kind of let the universe like guide me rather than like letting myself guide me. And the dating plan for me has always felt like too much control in my hands, and I don't like to have any control anymore. I am on an app. I'm on Hinge, and I don't like it. I don't like being on the apps anymore. It's actually quite funny. I used to be just toxic with the apps. I was like, it was like a little game, and I would like, you know, never spend the night by myself. Right. I was constantly just like looking, like trolling for pussy, like on these apps and like, and for dick, like, and trying to like, you know, whatever. And now being back on them, I do get triggered very easily because it's a lot of like just memories coming up from just having that something about that gesture of swiping right on or left on somebody when you don't like, when you don't like them. So like, I have a holistic approach to the apps where if I'm going to not match with somebody, I do say like a quick little blessing. So granola, but I love it. I love it. I lean into it. I'm crunchy. It's fine. I'll say like their name. I'll be like, hey, Anna, I hope you get everything that you are looking for on this app. And I wish you nothing but health, prosperity, and happiness. And then I swipe. It's just like a nice little thing I can do so that it's not so...
It's like the Marie Kondo of
there
apps.
There you go. Yeah. And then when I...
Mindful
swiping. And before I swipe right on somebody that I do want to match with or whatever, I'm like... Regardless of the outcome, I am not attached. Like, I'm here to meet people, and that is it. And then I'll swipe, and, you know, and still I, like, can wish them, like, nothing but, because, you know, it's not always likely that they're gonna swipe with me or match with me. Right. So I'll do a similar thing when I match, but it's, like, I really don't, I'm now kind of in the love avoidance where I'm, like, I don't know if it's out there for me. I don't know if it's out there. Like, I don't... And I, like, am actually not... Now that I read the cards for others, I don't really read them for myself anymore, especially not in that, like, way that I was doing it before where I was just like, just give me a sign that something good's gonna happen. And it's like, now I, like, I'm 100% cocksure that something good is gonna happen, that many good things are gonna happen, that I don't, like, really need to, like, snort the tarot cards, like, to feel comforted like that. But I like people. Like, I have a couple crushes right now on people that, that one of them knows two of them know I have crushes on them, and nothing is being done about it. I cannot name names because they will probably listen to this. but the two people that I and it was really scary to tell, because my old thing was to be like, I like you, now let's fuck. Or like, I wouldn't even say like I like them. I would just like hook up with them, and then that was how they knew I liked them. You know what I mean? And like,
that was my style. Yeah, I very much
that
relate.
Hasn't happened. Like, that actually hasn't happened in quite some time. And I have recently come out as non-binary, and have recently come out as like gay with a capital G. Like, and like, I do not desire cis men anymore. It's just not in the cards, so to speak, for me. That is something that I did ask the, not the tarot, but the Akashic Records, which is another method of mediumship, I guess you could say, that I partake in. If anyone is interested, I'll make a little code, and you can type in "dyking out" at checkout, and I'll give you a discount on my tarot and Akashic Records session. If you want, you get your tarot cards read, your Akashic reads, get your soul read. Give you a little discount. But yeah, the records were like, no cis men, you don't need it. Like, that's not who you want to be with. That's not ever who you wanted to be with. It's just that you were kind of compulsory hetero for a while. And now that you know that your desires are to be with women, femmes, and like non-binary people and trans people, like, then you, like, you're good. Just don't go back to the thing. Revisit, don't recreate, right? But yeah, I'm not like actively dating anybody right now. I'm actively self-partnered, and I'm recently identifying as solo polyamorous, in that like, if I am to get into a relationship right now, like, I want to not just be in one relationship because I was a serial monogamous, and it never worked. Like, it never fucking worked for me. It always led to either, like, one of us cheating or what happened last time, which is, like, us U-hauling and me being, like, severely unhappy and not being able to differentiate who was who and, like, who, where I started and where they ended or whatever. So yeah. I think if I'm in a relationship right now, I'd have to be my primary partner, or maybe the universe or my ancestors is my primary partner. And then everyone else, like, is not on a hierarchy. Like, I don't like the whole, oh, we're poly, but I have a primary. Like, I don't really like that whole, like, ranking people thing. Like, that feels really icky to me. For me, I respect it if you do that and you can do that healthily. I personally can't put anyone on a pedestal except for myself. And so, yeah, I'm single. I don't even identify as single because I do have a partner. That partner is me. I'm taking care of my shit, and I treat myself like I would treat, like, a hot, like, girlfriend or lover. I really want, yeah, oh my God, with my arms being all fucking banged up, it would be so tight to have some, like, hottie, like, you know, taking care of me and, like, at my bedside. But it feels also really fucking badass to be able to do that for myself without, you know, needing the care and attention of somebody else. It's actually really, really fucking validating and affirming to be able to take care of myself through this physical pain, because I've never been able to do that before. Like, it was actually always my favorite time, you know, with my ex, was, like, when I was in some kind of physical pain. Like, after I got my IUD, he just, like, took care of me all day, and he just, like, fed me brownies, and we watched Booksmart together, and
oh my God, I'm a love addict. I was looking forward to my second Moderna shot because I was like, and I will be taken care of by my partner.
I mean,
I really was.
And it's like the cool thing with love addiction is that everybody can relate to it in some way, shape, or form. Maybe not in the extreme way where I was just like, I mean, low key, again, trigger warning, having sex when I fully didn't want to, like, you know, like things like that. Yeah. Like, but, you know, whatever. You might not relate to the extreme version of love addiction that I used to, you know, act out with, but you might relate to the little things, like, and that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with you. It's just like, it's just like people are so, I think people are beautiful innately.
It's a spectrum, like everything. Like, I mean, I say this, the gayest thing I did this week, call another thing a spectrum. I call everything a spectrum lately, but it does seem like love addiction is one.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I mean, it also seems, though, that recovery is so much more complicated, not more difficult, because I know substance abuse recovery is one of the, if not the most difficult things to have to do. But that, with substance abuse, there are things that you know you can do, like stay away from that substance, stay away from people who are using that substance. You know, there are programs, there are things you could follow. Yeah. But when it comes to having a complicated relationship with codependency and love, we're humans. We need people. Love is the most important thing in this world, mm-hmm. I believe. So,
well, I will say this, like, staying away from bars and staying away from people I knew were going to, like, have coke on them didn't keep me sober from alcohol and drugs. So why would staying away from people make me, like, keep me sober from acting out with people, right? Like, avoiding
point, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
avoiding and having a trigger list and knowing, like, what the triggers are. Like, that shit doesn't fucking work for me. Like, the only thing that has worked for me to keep me 100%, like, not, I don't like using the word abstinent, like, because I'm not, like, I'm not sexually abstinent. Like, that's not how I ID. If somebody was, like, aligned and, like, I was, you know, feeling them, they were feeling me, like, and we had gone on a couple dates and we liked each other, I wouldn't be like, I'm abstinent, sorry. Like, no, we would have sex. Like, if both of us wanted to, if both of us wanted to, we would have sex. Like, yeah. But, like, and something that I tell the people that I work with as, like, a mentor in the program, somebody who has been working this recovery, having these tools for a little over 3 years now, I tell the new folks, assuming that we're spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things. I, as an alcoholic, I can go into a bar. I can even smell tequila. I can even go to a party where I know a bunch of people are going to be smoking weed and doing coke. And I can go to that party and assuming I'm spiritually fit, I can be there without getting triggered. Yeah, like it might suck,
yeah.
But I have my phone, I have my resources, I have my crystals and whatever I need to do to like protect myself. I am the CEO of protection. I love to prepare emotionally for things rather than being like, I guess I should go to this party so I can be around people. And it's like, no, like assuming I'm spiritually fit, I can have sex. I could, you know, date. I can be on a dating app. I do all sorts of things that, like, a love addict shouldn't be able to do. But since I've got this, you know, recovery, I do, like, I have my shit together on some days, on most days. And, you know, I used to be super hard on myself and any positive feeling when I first came into recovery from codependency, love addiction, any good feeling, I was just like, I'm high. And, you know, I had to start wearing the tools of recovery like a loose cardigan and not as so much of a straitjacket. And I feel like I see so many people go back out into acting out and into the world of drowning in that self-pity when they start wearing the program or the tools or the steps or whatever you want to, you know, whatever your method or therapy or language of letting go, like as a fucking straitjacket where it's like, no, loosey-goosey, like keep it loose. You're not doomed forever if you flirt with somebody. If you see a pretty person on the street and you look them up and down, you're not going to hell. You're not going to lose your sobriety over that. That's not... You know, even if you like fucking masturbate, like, I mean, yeah, sometimes that's better than going out and cruising, especially in the age of COVID when you never know. Oh, like, yeah. I went on a date with a girl a couple weeks ago who was just like, oh yeah, I had COVID like a month ago and I'm all better now. And I've gotten vaccinated, but I was just like, oh shit. Like, you know where it came from? She's like, I absolutely know. I got it from a guy who like had lied to me about not having it. And he fully gave her.
It's probably a comedian.
Right? Oh my God. Probably.
Oh yeah. There's so many comedians lying about having COVID and go.
What the
shows.
Fuck?
That's a big thing here in New York right now. Yeah. It's actually...
See, that's why I'm not doing shows in person yet. I can't. I'm scared. I'm low-key terrified. But if you're willing to, like, be honest with yourself, you're really, really willing to, like, swallow and digest some, like, huge chunks of truth about yourself and, like, look in the mirror and stop fucking looking in the magnifying glass at everybody else's fucking problems. Because that was a big one for me, too, is like, well, I'm not an addict. Oh, she threw up in a girl's pussy. I'm not a fucking alcoholic. Like, you know, like, literally, like, that.
Melody needs to help herself. I'm fine.
Exactly. And I would do that with all the guys that I was, like all the people I was dating were serious drinkers, too. So I was, like, so, you know, and my last, like, kind of the person who, like, after... you know, I was done with him. Like I was convinced that I should kill myself because I was just like, well, you know, if I was willing to let that happen to me, then I should probably die. Like, you know, cause he was like hella narcissistic, had a bunch of like side chicks and like da 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 da. And I was convinced that I was useless, loveless, worthless, hopeless, would never recover from this. And what that gave me was this like desperation that was like, I'm desperate enough to fucking find God. Like, I'm desperate enough to go into some kind of, like, religious, like, you know, recovery. Like, and then I found out that it wasn't actually religious. They use the word God as kind of, like, a placeholder for anything that is a power bigger than Rivka. Like, yes, right. You know, and as right, long as it's not, like, myself or, like, my ex or, like, a bottle of tequila, like, I'm good. And so, like, I was willing to, like, drop everything to, like, really get serious about my mental health and my personal journey and my, like, sobriety and all that. And it has paid off. I mean, yeah, like I don't have like a perfect gay relationship right now, but I have my own apartment. I'm fully self-supporting. I'm like on my way to making six figures this year. And like, I mean, that's like not even the best part. Like the best part is that I get to do this like with myself and I don't have to like share a bed with somebody else. And like, I'm not like... spiraling out on the fact that I don't have a partner right now.
It seems like it was like almost a perfect storm of getting sober from substances and then also the pandemic. And a lot of people have had this experience where it's really forced you to learn how to live with yourself because you don't have your normal distractions, let's say.
Completely.
A lot of examining.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people got sober during the pandemic too. Like I'm seeing a lot of like new people like coming into the community or people that like were in it and then coming back. It makes me really happy that, right. you know, it just like is honestly more people that I can help, hopefully. Even this podcast, if you're hearing this and you're like, oh shit, like, you know, you can reach out, DM me about it. Like I am definitely, my DMs are always open. And I'm happy to share my resources, which have worked for me, and just lay them out for you so you can inspect them and see if you want to pick any of the tools up, you know? It's just, yeah, it is all like, it is something that can be recovered from. Even though, like, some days I'm like, oh, God, I'm still crazy. I'm still cuckoo. Like, you know, I'm still a lunatic and whatever. Like, when I had my friend over and I, like, hugged her and the pheromones, I was just like, ah, like, uh-oh, and her cheek is pressing my cheek. Do I kiss it? Like,
yeah, especially coming out of quarantine times. That's
It is a lot to have to have a sad friend like come over and like weep in my arms, and I'm just like, oh God, she smells like Lalabo. But you know, it's like just all information that like I don't have to like necessarily act on. It's just like, oh wow, like it felt really good that she trusted me to be to be in my home and be here when she was having like a stressful time. Noted. Now, do I rescue her or do I just continue about my business and continue to rescue myself? It's just always like I'm coming up against these like crossroads where I'm like, okay, this is what old Riv would do in 2017. What would Riv 2021 do? Okay, I'm gonna do that thing, right?
Yeah. You've said this a couple times and it's probably gonna be one of my new mantras. It's all information.
Yeah.
I love that.
Stick it in the good to know file.
I've never heard that and I love that.
Yeah, it's just data. It's like just stick it in the good data. good to know file for later, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Man, but I have to wonder how much being a performer from such a young age contributed to this. You were famously in School of Rock.
Famously.
I was like, wow, we're going to actually get through a whole episode and not bring it up. But then I just did. but yeah, how old were you at that time? Like that had to have been confusing.
Yeah, it was highly confusing. I was 10 years old. It gave me a really unrealistic expectation of what the industry would be like for me, because it was the first thing I ever auditioned for. And I booked it. So I was just like, oh, great, this is easy. And then it was not easy. I was very quickly made aware, and I don't think my mom really was aware of this, but I was made aware just by being, highly sensitive and highly receptive of other spirits and like whatever, just like telling me things. Like, and I knew when I walked into casting offices and manager meetings and stuff as a, you know, after the movie had come out, that this was a fluke. This was like a one-time thing. And maybe that was like a little bit of inner saboteur shit, but I kind of could tell that there wasn't really any leaning in like when I was like auditioning and stuff, because I didn't want to be there. I was like, I want to be in school. I don't want to be special. I want to be normal. Like, this is cool that I got to do this, but I just want my life back now. And I don't like this Hollywood thing. I love acting. Like, it's always been what I was meant to do. Storytelling, I think, is what I was meant to do rather than acting. And acting is like a fun vehicle for storytelling that I get to partake in. But then also is stand-up and music and all of the other shit that I fucking do, podcasting, etc., tarot, all of that tells a story. But it gave me this unrealistic expectation that things were going to be really easy for me. And also, like, when I came back to school after having done School of Rock, it was a lot of attention from boys for the first time. And even while I was, like, on set for School of Rock, one of the boys in the cast was like, I like you. I want you to be my girlfriend. And I was just like, I don't know what that means, but okay. Sounds good. And my mom was kind of like, yeah, he's really nice. You should do it. And I was just like, okay. And that was my first foray into a relationship, was my mom being like, he's really nice. You should say yes. Yeah. And then a couple experiences mirrored that, like, where I was a sophomore in high school and one of the senior boys from the theater program at my school asked me to prom, and he did it in a very like big showmanship-y way. And my mom was just like, well, you can't say no to that. Even though I really didn't want to go. She's like, you can't say no. He put in all that work, so you got to say yes. And I was just like, well, I really don't want to go with him. He's a fucking creep. And she was like, yeah, but the school's going to think you're a bitch if you don't go. So I was just like, noted. And so a lot of this was me doing things for the sake of not wanting to look like a bitch or not wanting to look like I like was mean. And that's a whole other episode.
Right, people
pleasing. People pleasing is a whole other episode y'all could do, honestly. Part two, I'll come back. Shit. I used to be the queen of people pleasing, but now I'm like, if it doesn't please me, then I'm not going to fucking do it. But yeah, I realized like super young what I wanted to do was tell stories, and my dad's also a divine storyteller. Like, he's a great storyteller to a point where he's a compulsive liar, you know. And
Like, I know the type.
He would be a great stand-up, honestly. And like, I just, you know, for a long time it became my higher power to book something bigger than School of Rock and better than School of Rock, but now I've come to this place of deep acceptance that School of Rock is such a good movie, and like, it was an honor, and I'm deeply grateful for, you know, all of the opportunities that it's led me to. Like, and rather than telling myself the whole like kind of old story of like, oh, they only like you because you're in School of Rock, like, it's like, well, sure, maybe that's why they brought you into this thing, yeah, but you're so much more than that credit. Like, I am so much more than that one credit. Where I was like 10 and like whatever, and like, yes, like, I love that, you know. The people on TikTok have been so nice. They've been so, like, you know, supportive, and you know, I was afraid I was gonna lose like a bunch of followers when I came out like as non-binary. It actually like grew, my following actually grew after I told my truth, and now it's grown even more now that I've changed my name and that I've accepted and digested all these deep divine truths about myself, and now that I'm like putting them out into the eye of the public and just being like, hey, this is who I am. I know that not everybody's gonna fucking like what I have to say. There are actually gonna be some people that fucking hate what I have to say, but I have important shit to say, so I'm gonna go ahead and say it rather than just like choking it back, which is like what I did when I was a kid, obviously, when something told me like, you probably don't want to go to prom with that boy, but you know, outside forces were like, no, go, because you'll fucking look like an asshole if you don't. Mm. Now I am so connected to my inner voice, that little gut voice that's like, don't do it, that I'm able to just say no. I was called in for this like one line walk on role on one of the shows that shoots in Chicago, and I mean, I could put something on tape for that, but I really don't want to do it. And then I was just like, why would I put something on tape for it if I don't want it, if I wouldn't even go if I got it? So why am I wasting these people's time? So I was able to just discern and say to my agent, hey, I'm not really interested in one line roles in Chicago right now. And I think it's the same of all relationships, that if, you know, I start dating somebody and they start, I don't know, for example, like the other night after I'd gotten my muscles scraped, somebody needed something from me so bad and it was so urgent. And I was just like, hey, it's actually not that urgent. I'm not going to be able to deal with this tonight because I'm bedridden. I got my muscles scraped, and any sort of tension or stress sends little pins and needles up and down my back. So I'm going to go ahead and airplane mode my phone for the night. I hope you can deal with this without me, and I hope you can understand that I need some rest.
And most times they can.
Yeah. There's so much power in saying no, and that's something that has taken me years and years to even get to. I felt like it wasn't until maybe the year before the pandemic that I started realizing that I was saying yes to everything, and then certain things I would be just dreading going to a show that obviously wasn't going to, I don't know, I'd be asked to do maybe like a concept show that was going to require me to put in 2 hours of prep and then go an hour by train somewhere for what was likely to be an audience of 3 people. And as soon as I said yes to it, I'm like, oh my God, why did I say yes? And then I was able to catch that immediately and being like, if I dread it now, it's only gonna get worse. So just reply and say, hey, I changed my mind. I'm not gonna do this. And it's okay.
Yeah.
That's not, you know. But the saying yes all the time, it's going back to that thing of like making decisions driven by fear of like, well, what happens if I say no? Are they going to hate me? Am I missing out on,
am
like,
I ever
going
to do stand up again? Is always the, like, if I say no to this, if I say no to this, like, one liner, like the character doesn't even have a name. Like, the character's name was like non-binary baddie or something like that. And the script was like hella misogynistic and like transphobic, to be honest. And like, I was just like, I don't want to fly out for this one liner thing on this show written by this highly problematic showrunner. Like, I don't want to be a part of that. So, you know, and that probably gives you a hint as to who who it is.
I know.
But like,
I was like, let's wrap this up so we can discuss off my
But like, I just, yeah, discernment is so important. And, you know, if I'm giving myself so freely to every person, place, and thing that needs me, quote unquote, and I say that in air quotes because nobody actually needs me, nothing is actually urgent. One of my mentors is always like, you know, if you know, Jesus could pause for 40 days or the Buddha could sit under a tree for 6 years and do nothing, like Rivka can wait 8 minutes to respond to a text message. Like, it's not that urgent. It's not that fucking urgent.
Right.
Like, you didn't need that meeting password that badly. Like, right. you know, and, or you didn't need that person's email address or whatever the fuck it is. Like, you know,
right.
And yeah, like again, it always goes back to the breadcrumbs thing. If you're just patient and you like, you know, ignore the crumbs and you're like, nah, that's just a crumb. I don't need to pick that up. There will be a giant flaky buttery croissant ready for you. Just, you gotta wait for it. I know. It's going to come out of the oven. It's going to be a little hot. You're going to like want to like grab it and eat it right away, but you gotta just wait for it to cool down and then you can savor it, you know?
I wish someone had given me that metaphor years ago because I fucking love croissants. So that would have saved me.
Well, now you can pass it on to yours, to your future, you know, mentees and kids and all of that.
Yeah, truly the best analogy I've heard in a long time. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I'm full of them.
So, Riv, you have a podcast. Tell us what you have going on that you want our listeners to check out, or do you have any final thoughts on love addiction as we wrap up?
Yeah, like I said, like love addiction, difficult to diagnose in yourself. Really difficult to, and it's even more difficult to accept it once you have gleaned that you are a love addict. But there are so many things that you can do, and there are so many like resources for love addicts, sex addicts, sex and love addicts, love avoidance, all of that, codependence.
Fantasy addicts.
Fantasy addicts.
That that's a thing.
Yeah. Fantasy addiction. I definitely suffer from that too. You know, and in recovery, like we say, intrigue addiction, which is like flirtation and like kind of the like the high you get off of like snorting a person's like personality or whatever. But, you know, the biggest thing that I have learned and gained from, you know, my recovery from love addiction is that I now know how to avoid situations that put me at risk. And unfortunately, every situation I was getting into was putting me at risk before I got sober, emotionally sober, that is. And also, like, you know, you can just say, all you need to do is say those three magic words, I need help. And like, the universe will hear that and you'll find help in whatever way you need. It might not be like, you know, therapy. It might not be like CODA or SLA or like, you know, any of those like, you know, 12-steppy programs. It might not be like, you know, rehab. There's actually rehab for love addiction, and I don't know if y'all knew that.
No.
Yeah, I never went, but a lot of my friends have. And like, you know, it might just be as simple as you meet somebody who has recovered from this and they like give you some advice, like, or you hear this podcast and you're like, wow, I actually like feel like I can, you know, get better from this. And it is possible. Like, it's just like all about like acceptance and honesty and willingness. And like having an open mind and then the podcast that I host is called Where Are We Now? I connect and chat and kiki with fellow folks who grew up in the spotlight. Some of them stayed in the spotlight, others faded out, or others like opted out of it. And it's a really fun time. It's a really fun pod. You also get fun little solo episodes where I literally just talk about where I am that day.
Nice.
Yeah. We're all over the podcast places. And I got a Patreon as well. That's just patreon.com/RivkaReyes, TikTok, Instagram, Rivka.Reyes, Twitter, Rivka Reyes. Thank you.
Hell yeah.
Love it. Follow, listen, all the good stuff. Thank you, Riv. This is so great.
Truly. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. Thanks, Melody. It's good to connect with both of you.
Such great energy from Rivka.
Such great energy and a wealth of knowledge that we will take with us into this listener question.
Great. Because it's a doozy.
Yeah. Let's get into it. I got married when I was 21, but it was to a great guy. I love him dearly. We are still married, and I am happy being his wife. I really like our life together. But I feel
all right, stop selling it so hard. Who are you trying to convince, us or you?
No. Yada, yada, kidding. Yada. I'm in love with Melody Kamali. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Continue.
I feel like there is a black hole in my heart. Something is really missing. I know that it is love and intimacy with women, but I don't know what to do about it. Classic. I sit up at night when he sleeps just looking up lesbians on Instagram. I look at their photos and get tears. I wish I could express myself that way. I wish people knew me as gay because that's how I feel inside. I explain this to him and he understands, but also hates it, obviously. We've tried dabbling in threesomes, which was fun, but it didn't give me what I need. I'm missing intimacy, holding hands, cuddling, deep conversations. I fear myself cheating to be able to have that experience, but I don't want to be that kind of person. I also fear leaving him for a woman, and I may feel the exact way for men as I have been feeling for women this whole time. Any ideas or suggestions?
Yes, just listen to next week's episode.
Yeah.
That's our
suggestion. What I was going to say. Stay tuned. We've got just the conversation coming up for you next week.
Yes, but
until then,
I'll give you a little advice. It does sound like, you know, if you have tears looking at photos of lesbians on Instagram, this is something that you can't ignore. And it seems like you figured this out, but a threesome definitely isn't the answer to it. It sounds like you know what's going on. It's just kind of what do you do? And it's hard because you have to make a decision. It's like, do you say, you know what? I truly think I'm happy, which I don't think you truly are, because you say you feel like there's a black hole in your heart, and that is not a good sign. So I wouldn't go the route of just being like, push it down. That's terrible advice. Don't push it down.
I mean,
that is
get
one thing you
sick,
could do.
It feels like at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. That black heart will grow and spread. The other thing is, it sounds like you've had a conversation with him and he hates this and he's not happy with this. But if you need to be able to explore this side of yourself, like, that's what you need to do. And if he wants to be part of your life, he either has to figure out a way to be okay and to love you and trust you enough to know that this is what you need and what's best for you, or it ends the relationship. And your fear of, if you leave him for a woman and then you feel the same way about men, then maybe that just means you're polyamorous, that polyamory is right for you. Mm-hmm. And if your husband isn't the person to be polyamorous with, then it's not the relationship for you. This is really hard stuff.
It is really hard stuff.
And you care about the person. Obviously, you care about him. You like your life together.
Yeah.
We talked about this in our episode with guest Samantha Ruddy about... it was dating your ex, and it was about restructuring a relationship, but it sounds like your relationship needs restructuring. You can't have a situation, I think, where you say, oh, let me just try this for myself, and then you're still married to him, and then he's kind of feeling held captive. Like, you either need to restructure the relationship in a way that works for both of you, or you need to end it. But I don't think you can have a situation, which would probably be the ideal one for you and feel the safest, is have him be okay with you to go off and experiment and
see how
until
you feel
like, how you feel, and then go back and report back and adjust accordingly. But that doesn't really seem fair to him either. And then that also doesn't really seem fair to whoever you might be experimenting with. So you have to have a relationship that either allows you to be intimate with multiple humans, regardless of gender, or you need to start over, which is, again, very hard because you have a life that you like. But what do you like about it? Is it you love the life, or that you're used to the life, that there's comfort in the life? Or would you love feeling more fulfilled and having that black heart not be there and not feeling so tortured by feeling like you're not living your authentic life?
Right. I mean, you're looking at photos of lesbians and you're welling up. I mean, a lot of these lesbians had to probably make some similar uncomfortable decisions and have heartbreaking conversations with people too. And
great
look at how
point.
Happy they are now, you know?
Great point. Great point, Melody.
It's like, it's necessary.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're being really honest with yourself, I think that's the first step. Be really, really honest with yourself about what you want. Step two, have a aggressively honest conversation with him. See if there's a possibility
aggressive
to
honesty.
Restructure. I think they call it radical honesty, but I'm a Capricorn, so I'm going to say aggressive honesty.
Oh, yeah. All aggressive everything.
Wishing you the best, though, because that sounds like such a tough spot to be in, and heart goes out to you.
Yeah.
So if you have a question for us that you want us to answer here on the pod, you can email it to dykingout@gmail.com. If you need some queers to look at on Instagram and get emotional over, you can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
And you can follow us at Dyking Out on all platforms. And thank you so much for listening this week.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
Attention, fans of fairy tales that are magical, hilarious, and grim. The award-winning Pinna original podcast Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest has new episodes out now. While you've probably heard of the Brothers Grimm, you've never heard these tales told in quite this way. I'm Adam Gidwitz, best-selling and Newbery Honor author of books for children, and in Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest, I share the real, weird, grim fairy tales with real, weird, hilarious kids. In each episode, you not only get to hear a story, but you also get to enjoy this group guessing what'll happen next, cracking jokes, and sharing their own perspectives on the tales. Also, heckling me. They love to heckle me. The episodes are rated on a scale from grim to grimmer to grimmest, so there's always a great variety of tales to explore with your family. You can listen to Grim, Grimmer, Grimmest now wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow the show so you don't miss new episodes.